Stand by for the fastest 60 minutes in Jewish radio. It's time for the Jewish Experience. And welcome back. It's the 17th day of the Omer. Hey, only 32 days left till the holiday of receiving our most precious Torah. Hi, I'm Hirsch DeLynn, your host, and you are tuned in to Pittsburgh's only Jewish radio program, The Jewish Experience. And the parsha this week is a double one, Tazria Metzora. These sections of the Torah deal with purity versus impurity. Talks about how a woman goes to the mikvah, a ritual bath, that a male child must be circumcised on the eighth day of his life. Now, tsaras, sometimes translated leprosy, is not the same leprosy you see in the movies. This is a spiritual disease usually caused by lashon hara, or what they call the evil tongue, or spreading gossip. Not a good thing. A kohen or priest is the only one that can tell you if you have tsaras, and the only one that can clear you of it. So be nice to the next Kohen you meet. You never know when you might need their services. Of course, all this applied when the temple was standing in Jerusalem, and today we're so far from spiritual purity that we don't have the possibility of tzaras, but we're in the footsteps of Mashiach, a righteous Messiah. So any day, the one above will reveal his presence, and he will rebuild the temple in Jerusalem and usher in the final redemption. At that time, we will be ritually purified to the extent that we will need to be very careful about becoming impure. And of course, all this should happen immediately. And speaking of things happening immediately, our staff is immediately ready to bring you the best in educational Jewish radio with Musical Moish, Rabbi Meir Goldwasser, Rabbi Yosef Eisen, and Mr. Ward Lin. So sit back and enjoy 60 minutes of the best Jewish radio in Pennsylvania. Special guest this week is Doran Kornbluth. He's an inspiring lecturer and a teacher who travels the country. In fact, he's traveling in Pittsburgh this week. He spoke recently, sponsored by the Kol Jewish Learning Center. And he inspires families to come closer to Judaism, speaks on the importance of Jews marrying other Jews, and, well, he sounds like a trend breaker. So we'll look forward to hearing from him. Stay tuned and find out. Of course, we will have your community announcements and Mazel Tovs, along with current news fresh from Israel National Radio, coming up on the half hour. Don't forget to take time now to support Jewish Radio in Pittsburgh. You can sponsor your favorite segment each week and send an email to jewishexperience@verizon.net or call 412-979-5770, and we'll let you in on all the details, just like Perfect Flooring did, our new sponsor. We want to welcome to the program this week. If you want to hear us on the air each week, you should write a check now and become a partner in our exciting endeavor with you. Rabbi Goldwasser's Torah lesson is sponsored by Reb Yisrael Zerlo, and the community news and announcements is sponsored by Kramer's Windows and Glass Block. The popular Feminine Perspective and Rabbi Eisen's Moment in Jewish History is available for sponsorship. So call right now and reserve your spot. Rabbi Goldwasser's popular story segment is now sponsored by Perfect Flooring. Remember, if you enjoy listening to our program, your financial support is critical to making this program available to you in your homes each week. Entire staff does work hard to bring you the best in Jewish programming, but we do rely on your financial support. And as always, we thank our regular sponsors, Burton Hirsch Funeral Home, Next Generation Financial Services, First Mariner Bank, Pittsburgh Simcha Orchestra, led by our own Musical Moishe, and Artistic Photography. Don't forget to ask for a special gift of a beautiful refrigerator magnet. Of course, it's yours free. All you got to do is give us a call or send us an email at jewishexperience@verizon.net. Now, we got candlelighting time this week is 7:46 p.m. You got plenty of time to sit back and relax. And we have less than five more weeks of a cappella. So take it easy. Sit back, enjoy the music, and get ready for Shabbos. Pa 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 p Rabbi Goldwasser's Parsha segment this week is sponsored by Reb Yisrael Zerlo in honor of the Refua Shlema of Klal Yisrael for the healthy recovery of all the people of Israel. And now, our resident rabbi, Rabbi Meir Goldwasser.
These days, between the festivals of Pesach and Shavuos, are marked by the custom of Sfira, counting the days of the Omer. We begin counting immediately after the day of the liberation from Egypt, and we count for 49 days, at the end of which we celebrate Shavuos, the festival of receiving the Torah, marking the climax of the liberation. There is a famous teaching of the Baal Shem Tov: a Jew should always attempt to find, in everything he sees or hears, a lesson and guide toward better service of Hashem. This is true of everything one sees or hears, and is certainly so with regard to the festivals of our Torah, which contain important instructions for us in our daily lives. Let us examine one such vital lesson that is taught by the festival of Pesach and the observance of Sephirah. For centuries, the Bnei Yisrael were enslaved in Egypt, in a bondage of body and spirit, and were in great danger of assimilation. In fact, they had descended to such a low spiritual level that when Moshe brought them the message of their deliverance from Egyptian bondage, they did not listen to him because of lack of spirit and hard labor. However, after their liberation from enslavement, they attained, in a comparatively short time, the highest spiritual level man can reach. Every man, woman, and children was fit for divine revelation at Mount Sinai, worthy to receive the highest knowledge of wisdom and faith for all generations to come. This shows that every person is capable of rising from the lowest depths to the loftiest spiritual heights in a remarkably short time, if only he has the sincere and wholehearted desire and will to do so. The Bnei Yisrael had such desire and will. When they learned of the real purpose of their liberation, the receiving of the Torah at Har Sinai, they were impatient for that moment and counted every day in eager anticipation of the event. For this reason, we too count the days of Sfira, recreating the feelings of our fathers in our own hearts.
Retirement can be a wonderful reward for years of hard work, but it can also be stressful as you deal with questions about how to maintain your standard of living while protecting what you worked so hard for. What if I told you that you could generate extra cash flow without touching a penny of your savings, investments, or current income? If you or someone you love is 62 years or older and owns their own home, they may be able to take advantage of a federally regulated program called a home equity conversion mortgage or reverse mortgage. Seniors all across the U.S. are using reverse mortgages to increase their cash flow for purchasing long-term care insurance, putting grandkids through college, making charitable donations, paying off credit card debt, paying for prescription drugs, buying vacation homes, and paying for much-needed home repair. Call for a free copy of the Homekeeper Mortgage Consumer Fact Sheet today. Get the facts and help yourself and your family through a reverse mortgage. Call Andy at 412-562-2220 for a free copy while supplies last. Again, that number is 412-562-2220 for your free copy of the Homekeeper Mortgage Consumer Fact Sheet. First Mariner Bank is an equal housing lender.
Will Israel ever see an end to violence? How will the war against Iraq's insurgents impact Israel? Will changes on the Supreme Court have any effect on the Jewish community? Is anti-Semitism in Europe on the rise? What can be done about it? For a look behind the headlines, read the Forward, the nation's Jewish newspaper. The Forward reveals the personalities, motivations, and histories that are fueling the news abroad. The Forward also provides an in-depth look at issues affecting us at home, with comprehensive reports on everything from politics and religion to culture and the arts. It even has its own matchmaking section for Jewish singles. Try 4 weeks free, then be billed $24.95 for another 26 issues. Not satisfied? Just write cancel on the bill and keep the first four issues free.
Call now for The Forward, 800-992-3333. That's 800-992-3333. All around us, life is moving faster and faster. Things are changing all the time. And it's a comfort to know in your time of need that at Burton Hirsch Funeral Home, the Jewish tradition continues. Burton Hirsch Funeral Home has served the Pittsburgh Jewish community since 1947 and has recently remodeled its entire facility to better serve you. Burton Hirsch Funeral Directors are members of the Jewish Funeral Directors Association and work closely with area rabbis to ensure that your needs as a Jewish family are totally met. Their attentive and compassionate guidance results in treating each family as their own. I personally met with Michael Hilgefort. And did you know that Burton Hirsch Funeral Home is even involved with community educational programs to ensure that Jewish families know what to do to have a proper burial? In your time of special need, call Squirrel Hill's only Jewish funeral home, Burton Hirsch, at 412-521-2600. That's 412-521-2600. They welcome your request to visit and tour their state-of-the-art facilities. Burton Hirsch Funeral Home, proud sponsors of the Jewish Experience. 412-521-2600.
Ben chorin lihibatel mimena, v'lo ata ben chorin. Sheyibane beis hamikdash, sheyibane. Sheyibane beis hamikdash, sheyibane. Sheyibane, bimhei Rabbi Aveinu, Sheyibane, Sheyibane Beis Hamikdash, Sheyibane, Sheyibane Beis Hamikdash, Sheyibane, Sheyibane, bimhei Rabbi Aveinu, Sheyibane, Sheyibane Hamikdash. Sheyibane beis hamikdash, Sheyibane. Sheyibane beis hamikdash, Sheyibane. Bimhei Rabbi Aveinu, Sheyibane. Bimhei Rabbi Aveinu, Sheyibane. Sheyibane hamikdash. Sheyibane, bimhei Rabbi Aveinu, Sheyibane, Sheyibane hamikdash.
It's time for A Moment in Jewish History with the author of Miraculous Journey, Rabbi Yosef Eisen.
The Slobodka School of Mussar. Rabbi Nassim Tzvi Finkel, a disciple of the Altar of Kelm, founded the Slobodka School of Mussar. Known as the Altar of Slobodka, Rabbi Finkel founded a yeshiva in Slobodka, a suburb of the Lithuanian city of Kovna. He stressed a very uplifting form of Mussar, highlighting the sublime greatness of the human soul. The awareness of having been created by God and having been endowed with a pure soul infuses man with the ambition to attain perfection. Each person is great and has immeasurable potential. Slobodka took students beyond their personal limitations and lifted them into the rarefied regions of spiritual greatness. The Altar was a consummate pedagogue whose mastery and knowledge of human nature were unsurpassable. He motivated and led, inspired and taught, influenced and innovated. Many of the great Torah leaders of recent times were products of Slobodka, including Rabbi Aaron Kotler, Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, Rabbi Yaakov Yitzchak Ruderman, and Rabbi Yitzchak Hutner. The Navaritic school of Musar. In contrast to the tranquility and harmony of Slobodka, the Navaritic approach to Musar demanded constant tension and critical self-analysis. Struggle against every weakness and affirmation of man's imperfection were at the core of the Navaritic message. The idea was not to perfect the existent self in the way of Slobodka, but instead to tear it down and rebuild it, engaging in a never-ending struggle for perfection and an uncompromising search for the truth. Rage, emotion, and passion are the only tools that can break open the heart and the mind, empty it of all unworthiness, and allow inner rebirth. The Altar of Navaritic was wont to say that if a person only changes for the better, bit by bit, he is similar to one who, while in the process of making his house kosher, cooks his remaining non-kosher food there, in which case his newly kosher dishes become non-kosher again. Rabbi Yisrael Salanter influenced Navaritic's founder, Rabbi Yosef Yozel Hurwitz, a scholarly merchant who met the great Musar master on a business trip. Subsequently, Rabbi Hurwitz gave up his business dealings and embarked on a rigorous campaign of self-perfection in order to attract aspiring students to the paths of Torah and Musar. In 1896, Rabbi Yosef started a yeshiva in the Lithuanian town of Navaritic, and the school quickly grew into an entire network called Beis Yosef, attracting large numbers of students. These institutions followed the path of Navaritic Musar, stressing communal self-criticism, breaking one's ingrained habits and desires, and above all, an uncompromising search for the truth. For example, if students bought new suits, they let others wear them first in order to break the owner's innate selfishness. Similarly, students were trained to go into stores and request items that the store did not sell, such as asking for nails in a store that sold spices, in order to purposefully suffer embarrassment, a cure for the characteristic of arrogance. This kind of act imbued the students with a sense of mission, to be undaunted by any hardships or ridicule. This is Rabbi Yosef Eisen wishing you a happy and healthy Shabbos.
This week's news segment is brought to you by Kramer's Windows and Glass Block. When your requirements call for replacement windows or glass block, call Ed at 412-848-2262. That's 412-848-2262.
Now, from the Israel National Radio Newsroom, here's Ernie Singer.
Police out in greater force than usual for Memorial Day and Independence Day Monday and Tuesday, pushed off from the usual dates to avoid preparations on Shabbat. Civil Guard volunteers and soldiers also carrying out motorized and foot patrols in places where the public is concentrated, including markets, shopping centers, and cemeteries during Memorial Day, and in parks and beaches on Independence Day. Fixed and mobile roadblocks deployed to try and locate suspicious vehicles and get drunken drivers off the road on Independence Day. Police also checking out pubs and nightclubs for sale of alcohol to minors, detonation of explosive caps, and other forms of violence. The Army has revoked its decision to allow an Independence Day march to Chomesh, one of the four northern Shomron Jewish communities uprooted during the disengagement of 2005, according to the Haaretz Daily. The Army spokesperson's office issuing a reminder that it's illegal to go to the site, where thousands went on Passover without incident. Observances in memory of fallen soldiers, pre-state fighters, and victims of terror getting underway Thursday with the unveiling of a memorial monument for the 21 Jewish and Arab victims of the terror attack at the Maxim restaurant in Haifa in October 2003. Minister of Public Security Avi Dichter calling the bombing the worst massacre of Jews since the Holocaust. The Bible of Meir Feinstein, one of two Irgun members who blew themselves up in a Jerusalem jail while on death row in 1947, will be returned to his family in a ceremony at the Museum of the Underground Prisoners in Jerusalem by relatives of the British soldier who guarded them. Feinstein and Moshe Barazani saved the life of guard Thomas Henry Goodwin by asking him to leave the cell while they prayed. The two then blew themselves up with a bomb they had concealed, Goodwin instructing in his will that the Bible be returned to Feinstein's family. Hundreds accompanying Professor Liviu Librescu to his final rest Friday morning in Ranana, one of 32 killed in Monday's shooting attack at Virginia Tech University in the United States. The Holocaust survivors saving more than 20 students from the shooter. Librescu's son Joe expressing pride in his father's efforts. A presidential envoy from Librescu's native Romania presenting the family with a medal for bravery. Joshua Stuhlman, the former Pennsylvania State University art student whose anti-terrorism artwork was censored by the school and who was labeled a racist propagandist for Israel by two professors, has filed a complaint in federal court claiming defamation and violations of his constitutional rights of freedom of speech and of association. Director Charles Garoyan of the Penn State School of Visual Arts claiming that Stuhlman's exhibit violated Penn State's hate speech code and its policy on non-discrimination and harassment. Garoyan falsely saying that Stuhlman's work had been commissioned by Penn State's Hillel Jewish Student Organization and was used to advance Hillel's particular cultural and political agenda. The continuing saga of kidnapped British Broadcasting Corporation reporter Alan Johnston has left the Gaza area without foreign journalists and is damaging the reputation of the PLO, according to reporters. Quoting Simon McGregor Wood, chairman of the Foreign Press Association in Jerusalem, Gaza for most of the Foreign Press Corps has become a no-go zone. The Jerusalem Post reporting that Israel's Air Force has expressed interest in purchasing the world's most advanced jet to maintain Israel's military edge in the Middle East. The F-22 Raptor, a fifth-generation stealth fighter jet built by Lockheed and Boeing, not mentioned during this past week's visit by U.S. Defense Secretary Robert Gates, trying to ease Israel's fears about the sale of bunker buster bombs and other arms to Arab states. The Ma'ariv Daily says King Abdullah II of Jordan may address the Knesset in an attempt to convince the Israeli public to agree to the Saudi peace plan during a two-day visit to Israel in the next few weeks. The plan calls for a return to pre-1967 borders and a possible influx of Arabs within those borders. The King and Prime Minister Ehud Olmert agreeing to the visit before the invitation was repeated in public by Knesset Speaker and Acting President Dalia Itzik during her visit to Amman this past week. Tovia Singer shares the mic with ABC's John Batchelor Monday night at the Young Israel of Aberdeen, New Jersey. The program will be broadcast Tuesday night, 10 to 12 Eastern Time, Wednesday morning, 5 to 7 in Israel. After that, on demand on the Internet at IsraelNationalRadio.com. Shabbat Gimel, or the third of Iyar on the Jewish calendar, and the weather forecast, fair and warmer Friday and Shabbat. Sharab heat and wind conditions Sunday afternoon and evening, with haze and a chance of light local rain, restricted to the north and center of the country on Monday, otherwise partly cloudy and cooler. In Jerusalem Friday, 19 degrees centigrade, 66 Fahrenheit. At the Red Sea and the Dead Sea, 31 degrees centigrade, 88 Fahrenheit. Ernie Singer, Israel National Radio.
We want to wish our brothers and sisters in the Holy Land a very peaceful and restful Shabbat.
A little bright spot in the weeks of Sphira. A couple of mazel tovs for you. Mira and Jake Sachs and the entire family on the birth of a baby boy. And Rabbi and Mrs. Shmuel Weinstein and Rabbi and Mrs. Joseph Silverman, longtime friends, both families, are now celebrating a simcha together on the engagement of their children, Shlomo and Connie. Also, Rabbi Levy and Elke Langer on the bar mitzvah of their son, Avraham Ava. And, of course, winter is finally behind us. Time to get your kids 3 to 11 registered in Camp Ganya Shoal. If you haven't done it yet, it's getting late. Camp runs July 9th to August 17th at the Yeshiva Boys and Girls School, and it's filling up pretty fast. They're going to have swimming, they're going to have trips off campus, all kinds of stuff. So more information, you want to visit cgipittsburgh.com or call Rabbi Shmuley Rothman at 412-715-4883. The meeting of Food Addicts and Recovery Anonymous meets at Shari Torah every Sunday evening from 7 to 8:30 p.m. Program is a recovery group for people who cannot control their eating and or their weight. Program is not for women only. Men are invited. For more information, call Elon at 412-422-2224. And don't forget, if you'd like to have your muscle tubs on our program, you can give us a buzz at 412-979-5770. Or email jewishexperience@verizon.net by noon on Monday for that week's program. Don't forget, candlelighting time this week, climbing right up, 7:46 p.m. Okay, very excited to have with us today Doran Kornbluth, who is an entertaining and thought-provoking lecturer who happened to have been in Pittsburgh, invited to be in Pittsburgh earlier this week on behalf of the Kollel Jewish Learning Center, speaking on the subject of intermarriage, something that's not so politically correct today. But he is an aspiring lecturer that talks to Jewish parents how to keep their families Jewish, helping Jewish singles, why it's important to marry other Jews. And he's the creator of the popular Jewish Matters pocketbook series, author of the best-selling Why Marry Jewish. Doran, welcome to the program.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Pleasure to have you. And, you know, you're obviously traveling around, doing a lot of speaking, talking about subjects that people would probably rather avoid talking about. How is your response? How do people respond to you?
Well, it's a great question, actually. Let me tell you a little bit of history, because it'll
sure.
help answer your question.
Absolutely.
I basically got into this whole subject, this series of subjects, about 10, 12 years ago, when I was doing a lot of informal and formal Jewish education. And when I was working with college students, the subject of dating other Jews or dating non-Jews, intermarriage, kept coming up. And I looked for something to give to them. I looked for a book that I could recommend for them to read or to think about. And at the time, I was shocked. I couldn't find anything to give them. I couldn't find an approach that worked. I couldn't find a book. So I started researching. And the result, many, many years later, was Why Marry Jewish, which is my book, Why Marry Jewish, Surprising Reasons for Jews to Marry Other Jews. It came out by Targum Press in 2003. And I'm delighted to report that it has been one of the top Jewish bestsellers in recent years.
Right.
We're constantly reprinting, and it has gotten very wide reviews and feedback and word of mouth. And the reason is very simple. That just as you said, the whole subject of who to marry, who to date, is so sensitive and so, you know, politically not correct, that when people finally heard that there was an approach that made sense, that I don't look down at other people, I'm not judging anybody, I actually encourage Mormons to marry Mormons, Catholics to marry Catholics, Muslims to marry Muslims, for many of the same reasons that I encourage Jews to marry other Jews. And so what I've basically done is I've sort of debugged some of the negatives and focused on the positives. And people have really been helped by that. And so once I started talking to singles, then I started getting a lot of requests. And I'm on the road, you know, speaking, I guess it's at least 10, 12 weeks a year total that I'm speaking all over the States, Canada, Europe a couple times last year. I'm going to be in Australia over the summer, in South Africa. It's really all over the world now.
Right.
And one of the things that I kept getting requests for was from parents, Jewish parents, who wanted their kids to marry other Jews, but didn't know how to talk about it. It just sounded bad. And so eventually I started giving seminars to Jewish parents. And then once I was speaking to parents about helping their kids marry other Jews, it got broadened eventually into raising your kids to stay Jewish. And that is something that is actually very politically correct. So that was actually much easier for people to understand and to deal with. And that's what I was, focusing on, mostly this trip. And that's sort of a thing that I think most people can and do want to hear about. Because studies have shown that most Jewish parents do want their kids to stay Jewish, but they don't know what it means. They don't know how to do it. And
Absolutely.
So that's what we're trying to do.
So you said surprising reason. I mean, you would think intuitively it's obvious that they should marry other Jews. It's just that in today's world they get in other environments and they get let off on other things and they, quote, fall in love and then they're stuck. So how do you deal with, first of all, what is your surprising reason why they should marry other Jews? And second of all, how do you handle this business of Jews in a Christian environment where they're out there and they do run into these things?
So it's a great question. The basic answer that I would suggest is as follows. Most people, when they think of why they should marry somebody else in the same religion, in terms of Judaism, it usually comes down to Jewish guilt. It's usually the reasons that are presented are that, religion doesn't allow it, or, you know, Hitler killed 6 million, how can you do this? Your grandfather, don't you? It's usually presented in negative. And what is surprising about the approach that I suggest, and this is the approach I suggest for parents, that they should read the book, Why Marry Jewish. They should certainly pass it on to their children, their teenagers, and their 20-somethings, 30-somethings to read. It's also, if a person's in a relationship with a non-Jew, both meant for the non-Jew to read also. What's surprising is that this is essentially self-interest. I'll give an example. If you have a couple that is from the same religious background, and you take the exact same couple and all the same socioeconomic background, you know, everything is equal except that suddenly the second couple, they have different religious backgrounds. Statistically speaking, the chances they're going to stay married go down dramatically. The chances they're going to be happy go down dramatically. The chances they're going to have problems go up dramatically. In other words, having one religion in a marriage is a huge plus for a marriage. Of course, there are exceptions. There's people in the same religion that get divorced and there's intermarriages that at least from the outside seem happy, although you never know the inside, but the outside seem happy. But but it's a huge plus for a marriage. I was speaking in Milwaukee in the fall, and a woman, I was speaking to grad students, and there was a woman who raised her hand. She was a little bit older than the rest of the crowd. She was in her 50s, and she said, can I say something? I said, of course. She said, I converted to Judaism. So everybody, of course, gets hushed in the crowd. People want to hear the story. So she said, I converted to Judaism 10 years ago when I was 44. She said, my two adult daughters in their 20s who did not convert, they're Christians. She said, it makes me cry. I'm looking forward to the Jewish holidays, and it means nothing to my daughters. Something happens in Israel, and I'm concerned and I'm worried, and it means nothing to my daughters. She looked around, this woman looked around to the students in the room, and said, why would you want to marry somebody who doesn't understand a core part of who you are? She said, my children don't understand a big part of me. Why would you want to marry somebody who doesn't understand a big part of who you are? And it's a part of who you are that gets more and more important as you get older. Studies have shown this. As a person gets older, their connection to their religion gets higher. So yeah, after the 20s, there's a drop in the teens and 20s, and then it goes higher in the 30s. As people age and have children, people get more interested in their religion, their culture, their heritage. So this is the first reason I encourage people to marry in the same religion. It's better for the marriages. Fewer problems on the negative side, a much higher chance of success and happiness and togetherness in the long term. Reason number two. I speak on 25, 30 campuses a year in the States. Almost every campus, without exception, a student will come up to me at the end of the talk and will say, you know, I grew up and I had one parent who was Jewish and one parent who wasn't Jewish, and it was really hard, and I don't want to do that to my kids. Every book on the subject is always the biggest chapter. Every seminar is always the biggest subject, the effect on the kids. There are, of course, kids who grow up in intermarried family homes, and they're fine, and they're just confident, and it's the exception.
Well, it's also the family that if one side really has no desire or care for their particular faith, it's not going to be a problem. It only becomes a problem when that person starts gravitating, and like you say, as they get older, they probably will. But if, as long as they don't gravitate toward their faith, it doesn't seem to be a problem. And the ones that I've known that are intermarriage, if you know, it only comes up, like I say, if they're competing. If they're not competing. There's one family, even a very, very firm family, so to speak, where the one side is, I don't know how they became from, but one side, actually works to make sure the mother's Jewish, so the kids are Jewish, but make sure that the kids have everything. I mean, the father works very hard, even though he's not Jewish, to work on, to make sure that they have that background and doesn't interject any of his own faith into the marriage, and that can work if as long as he keeps on that path.
Yeah, and so first of all, it's a huge. It sounds like that's sort of one of the lucky exceptions. Everybody thinks that we Jews are very good at sort of assuming that. Well, you know, I'll get him to agree to raise the kids as Jewish, and it won't be a problem. The truth is that, you know, in the vast majority of cases, you know, non-Jews also have a heritage, also have a background. They also go through cycles. Well, I know what I said when we were engaged, but how did I know how I'd feel when I have kids?
Sure.
You can't hold me to that agreement. Well, I don't understand. You get Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur and Passover. I can't have a Christmas tree. It's my only, you know, positive memory growing up.
Mm-hmm.
So Gallup poll 1998 showed that the least religious time in a person's life is their 20s. It's the least religious time in a person's life. When people get into 30s, they get more observant. Whether how far it goes is the whole question.
Right.
When people get more connected, what that means is when people come to me in their 20s and they say, what's the big deal? You know, we've been together for 2 years. We're not having any issues. So I respond to them, of course you're not having any issues. You're not supposed to have issues yet. Issues start in your 30s.
That's right.
So those are the two main reasons that I start with. And these are universal reasons, better for the marriage and better for the kids. But there's one more specifically Jewish reason. Very simply put, out of all the studies on the subject of intermarriage, right, and some of the effects, National Jewish Population Surveys, American Jewish Committee reports, Dr. Sylvia Brackfishman from Brandeis University, Dr. Stephen Cohn from Hebrew University, but a month ago released a major survey on the JTA, Jewish Telegraph Agency. Every study that I've seen, the chances that a child growing up in an intermarried home will stay Jewish are so small. If I were to tell you that it's 10%, I'd be exaggerating. It's less than 10%. Why? I don't understand. 50% of the parents are white. One parent is Jewish, one parent is non-Jewish. So it's 50-50. So 50% of the kids should identify as Jewish, and 50% of the kids should identify as non-Jews, right? It should be 50-50. No, it's not. Because our society is 98.5% non-Jewish. You have television, you have movies. To stay Jewish today takes more. And this is sort of where it branches into the other subject that I deal with, which is helping Jewish families stay Jewish. I come from Montreal. It's where I'm born and raised. It's where my parents are actually both born. But my family originally comes from Russia. We come from a town in Russia where the Jews spoke Yiddish and did not speak Russian, and the Russians spoke Russian and did not speak Yiddish for 700 years. Through most of Jewish history, Jewish parents did not have to do much to keep their kids Jewish.
Sure.
It was almost automatic. You know, we lived in separate communities. We were strong, knowledgeable, proud about who we are, where we were. We didn't want to be like anybody else, and they didn't want us anyway. Today, it's not like that. If a family wants to stay Jewish today, the parents have to do more about it. And this is what I really focus on when I speak to parents. We need to be proactive. We don't need to be perfect. We don't need to be perfect Jews. We need to be committed Jews. We need to be examples. We need to have an appreciation, an activity in our Jewish lives. We need to be happy about being Jewish. We need to pass on that commitment and that happiness to our kids. And if we do, there's a very strong likelihood they will stay Jewish. But if not, and especially in intermarried homes, it's a big, big world out there, and a lot of things happen. And
sure.
That's why there's so many Jews who are not staying Jewish today.
Wow. Well, we are about out of time, and it is fascinating. Obviously, you have the energy to get this message out, and I appreciate that, and I appreciate your work. Now, you said you're out 10 to 11 weeks out of the year. What do you do for the rest of the year?
Recover from my trip. And do a lot of writing.
A lot of writing, yeah. Hopefully, you're...
is tentatively titled Raising Kids to Stay Jewish. And that's the subject I've been specializing in lately, and that's I hope will be out sometime in the next year.
That's great. Well, I noticed from your website you have a background in political science, and I guess you got to use a lot of political finesse to get this done, and it sounds like you have the ability to do that. If people want to get in touch with you, how do they do it?
So the best way is through my website, doronkornbluth.com, doronkornbluth.com, doronkornbluth.com. The book is called Why Marry Jewish. You can get it through that site. Or you can email me.
Okay, great. It's not on Amazon or anything?
It is on Amazon as well, yes.
Right, very good. Well, Doron Kornbluth, thank you very much for being with us, and thank you for coming to Pittsburgh, and wish you much hatzlacha on your trips and your travels, and look forward to speaking to you again soon.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure, and thank you to all your listeners.
Take care. Have a good travel.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Dear Mr. President, as a believer in the Bible, you know that the Jewish people were given the land of Israel not because of a UN declaration, but because of a declaration from God. The Bible says God owns the world. There is room for everyone, but He promised Israel to His chosen people, hence the name, the Promised Land. As you are aware, Mr. President, the Bible stipulates that the eternal boundaries of this promised land includes everything west of the Jordan River. So to suggest now that a Palestinian state be carved from the West Bank and Gaza, land specifically included in God's promise, is wrong. It's time for America, one nation under God, to support the entire land of Israel. Because the promised land was promised forever. Sincerely yours, believersofthebible.org.
Shalom. 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 Let there be peace. Peace in the Holy Land, peace on every corner. Let there be peace. Shalom Bechelech Shava. Shalom, Bechelech, Shalom.
Take a look at the feminine side of things with the feminine perspective. Here's Miss Devorah DeLynn.
No will, no way. The Rambam tells us that the health of the body is dependent upon the health of the soul, and vice versa. In order for the body to function well, the soul must be attended to, for that fosters a good spirit and the will to continue going. In the same way, the body must be paid attention in order for the soul to be able to carry out what it was meant to do. Why is it that some people are deathly ill, yet they manage somehow to recover? The answer resides in their spirit and state of mind. If a person has a positive outlook and has the will to recover, the chances of recovery are much better. Studies have shown us that those patients who listen to music or watch something funny have a greater chance of recovery. Their souls benefit from their emotional reaction to funny things, so their bodily recovery is much more probable. This week's Parshios, Parshas Tazria Mitzora, speak about many things, most famously, the warning against Lashon Hara, evil gossip. Lashon Hara hurts three people. The one saying it, he gets punished. The one listening, he gets punished as well for not stopping it. And of course, the one about whom it was said. Lashon Hara is one of the worst sins a person can do. It travels far and wide and causes immense damage to the victim. There's a famous story about a man who said Lashon Hara and then went to his rabbi to find out how to repent. His rabbi told him to take a feather pillow, scatter the feathers to the wind, and then come back to him. The puzzled man carried out these instructions and then returned to his rabbi. The rabbi then told him to go out and collect all the feathers. When the man protested that the task was impossible, the rabbi said, "Now do you see the damage you have caused? How can one take back what one has said about somebody else? For surely the information is as scattered as the feathers in your pillow." The author of the Tzor HaMe'or speaks about the correlation between the illnesses of the body to those of the soul and teshuva. There are some illnesses which seem mild, but can be dangerous simply because there's no cure, like a toothache. The same is true of the soul's affliction from Lashon Hara. The person is not aware that he sinned, because he merely spoke, so he doesn't look for a cure. Then there are some illnesses that have a cure, but the cure is so bitter and difficult that the alternative seems better. The cure for Lashon Hara is going to the victim and asking him for forgiveness, a very difficult pill indeed. There are also some diseases that have a cure, but the cure is very far away, and there is a chance that the person might die before he gets the cure. Similarly, there are times when the victim is far away, and the one who said Lashon Hara cannot find him. Then there are some sicknesses that have a cure, that is readily available, but the body is so used to the disease that the cure's power is lessened. The same is true for those who speak Lashon Hara for a long time. They become so used to it that they don't even notice it. The cure, teshuva, must be done on a much larger and stronger scale in order for it to cure the person. The punishment for speaking Lashon Hara in the times of the temple was tsara'as, leprosy. Just as tsara'as spreads from the house to the clothes to the skin of a person, so too Lashon Hara spreads, afflicting each aspect of a person's life. One cannot stress enough the importance of refraining from Lashon Hara. And it will be, God willing, through our guarding of this and other mitzvot that will merit Mashiach Tzidkenu Achshav. Have a good Shabbos.
Yamama!
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 Yamama! Yamama! Yamama! Yamama! Yamama! Yamama! Yamama!
Yamama, 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 mama, yamama, 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 yamama,
Rabbi Goldwasser's story segment is brought to you by Perfect Flooring, 412-551-1697. Yitzchak Chico Kadosh says, we bring the showroom to you. Call 412-551-1697 for Perfect Flooring. And now, our renowned storyteller, Rabbi Meir Goldwasser.
During the winter of 1903, when the Friedrich Rebbe accompanied his father, for the couple of months he spent consulting medical specialists in Vienna, he would sometimes go out in the evening with his father to visit the Shtibelach, small informal houses of study and prayer of the local Polish Jews. To be among Hasidim, to hear the story from their mouths, to listen to an important saying, and to observe fine conduct and refined character. One Wednesday evening, on the 15th of Shvat, his father visited one of these shtibelach, where several older Hasidim were sitting around together and talking. As his father drew near, he heard that they were telling stories of the saintly Rav Meir of Primishlan. Among other things, they related that the mikveh in Rabbi Meir's neighborhood had stood at the foot of a steep mountain. When the slippery weather came, everyone had to walk all the way around for fear of slipping on the mountain path and breaking their bones. Everyone, that is, apart from Rav Meir, who walked down that path whether the weather was clear or not. One icy day, Rabbi Meir set out as usual to take the direct route to the mikveh. Two guests were staying in the area, sons of very important people, who had come somewhat under the influence of the Enlightenment movement. These two young men did not believe in supernatural achievements, and when they saw Rabbi Meir striding downhill with sure steps, as if he were on a solidly paved highway, they wanted to demonstrate that they too could negotiate the hazardous path. As soon as Rabbi Meir entered the mikveh building, therefore, they took to the road. After only a few steps, they stumbled and slipped and needed medical treatment for their injuries. Now, one of them was the son of one of Rabbi Meir's close chassidim, and when he was fully healed, he mustered the courage to approach the tzaddik with his question. Why was it that no man could cope with the treacherous path, yet the Rebbe never stumbled? Replied Rabbi Meir, if a man is bound up on high, he doesn't fall down below. Meirel is bound up on high, and that is why he can go up and down even on a slippery hill. This is Rabbi Meir Goldwasser wishing you all a good Shabbos.
Wrap up one-third of the Sphere of God, special edition of the Jewish Experience radio program. And a couple of reminders, if you haven't registered for Camp Gan Yisrael yet for a summer of a lifetime, you want to do it right away. 412-715-4883. Call Rabbi Shmuel and Connie Rothman. Also, the Food Addicts and Recovery Anonymous meeting Sunday evenings, 7 to 8:30. Call Ilana, 412-422-2224. And don't forget to call us if you want to have your Mazel Tovs and or events on our program, 412-979-5770, or you can email jewishexperience@verizon.net by noon on Monday for that week's program. And certainly also want to thank Doran Kornbluth, speaker and teacher, for his fascinating insights. And we can't leave, of course, without thanking our faithful and cutting-edge staff, Rabbi Meir Goldwasser, Rabbi Yosef Eisen, musicalmoish.com, Dr. Michael Shulman, Mr. Vordelin, and, of course, our ever-present engineer, ever-faithful, Jeremy LeBossenstein, for another outstanding show. Don't forget, candlelighting time this week, 7:46 p.m. It's been a ton of fun, but I am done. Abraham Schwartzberg asked me to say that. Till next week, I'm Hirsch DeLynn. Have a wonderful and restful Shabbat.
Shabbat Shalom.
Shabbat.